This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is my wife, my beloved wife's birthday today. She is 61. And I don't think she'd mind me telling you that. This is the year I turned 60. Whoop, whoop. Anyways, so all is well. All is well with the world. We had a good week at work, an interesting day yesterday and today. We've been using this new package called K2, and it has been surprisingly stable. We haven't really had that much trouble with stability and things working like they're supposed to be working. There are a few little quirks here and there, but you know, you get that. You just get that with software packages. One moment. You know, a few little quirks here and there, but it's been fine. And we've worked our way through it and yada yada. So yesterday, everything's going along. We're happy as a clam. And then somewhere along the line, there were some changes published to the server, our main server. And those particular Microsoft updates, they just blew K2 out of the water. The whole service just went wham and went down, and that was that, and it would not start back up again. So our production server just went done. Oh, so the guy who kind of watches over that server for us, his name's Justin. He worked really hard researching. That was yesterday afternoon, researching, trying to figure out what was going on. I was reading emails from him like at 10:30 last night. He was saying, okay, I think we need to do this. You know, it's like, okay, you know. So we did some emergency updates and patches from K2 and got it back up this morning. It did fix one of the quirky problems that we've been having, so yay for that, but the other one's still there. And we're talking to tech support about that. So it was a little exciting there for a while. Of course, I had to write the emails and say, okay, yes, we are down. We know we're down. We're working on it. And then, of course, I had to write the recap email of when we were back up and everything was working again, explaining what had happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but hey, it's technology. This stuff happens. Sooner or later, you're going to run into something like this where some server goes down and you just got to scramble around. Jesus was good. We appeared to be back up. Everything appears to be working. Yay. It wasn't, you know, like a disaster scenario where we lost a bunch of stuff. Everything seems to be fine. So, all is well. Things are puttering along. Though I just happen to think there were a couple of things I was going to check on that I didn't check on. I will have to leave myself a note. In fact, while I'm here, just a second. I did notice that when we were looking at the logs, when we were doing a deploy, that there were a couple of error messages that said, oh, couldn't start such and such a process. I'm going to just leave myself a note here, and I will say check workflow versus record instances, and we'll just do that while I'm thinking about it. Okay, there we go. In other news, all is well with the family. I may be attending a Valentine's party tomorrow, a little kiddo's Valentine party. My daughter was supposed to be going, and she got busy, and then my son-in-law was going to help with it, and then he's gotten indisposed, and so it may be coming down to me. So tomorrow I'll wear my Valentine's stuff, which consists of a t-shirt. I have a great Valentine's Day t-shirt. I've mentioned it here before. So I'll wear that, and I'll go to the little kiddo's Valentine party. Get that done, and you know, that's all seems to be going fine. It is my wife's birthday. One of her best friend from college, not one of her best friends, her best friend from college, Ray, is down. And so they've been kicking around today and having a hi-ho time, which is good. We're having a little party tomorrow night for her at a restaurant. We're just going to take the family out and do that. She said, at 61, I don't need any big deal. Let's just get something to eat. Okay, we can do that. So we're going to take care of that. The writing's going well. It looks like this book is going to come in at a decent length, not like last time where I was over 30,000 words. Everything is coming to a head, and I'm on chapter 28. There's usually about 30 chapters. It looks like we're going to be able to land it there, I hope. If not, I'll just find some things to kind of pad it out a little bit, but we should be coming in at about midway through chapter 28, so I have a chapter and a half to kind of wrap things up. And I think I can get it done in that amount. Chapter 29 might be a little long. And then I have to write chapter 30. The last chapter of the book is usually some kind of just... In the book, I have different sections that are just sort of like news feed sections. And that lets me step back and do a big overall analysis of what's going on, so you kind of get a different perspective. Chapter 30 is usually that. There's a blog from this thing called Blessings from Jerusalem, which is a daily blog that's put out supposedly by the Leadership Council's Office of Communications and blah, blah, blah. So, and then, of course, I have the epilogue to write. And so the epilogue, I usually take a little extra time and kind of focus in, try to get something that has some emotional context to it. And so, you know, that means I've basically got the epilogue, chapter 30, chapter 29. Those are 3,500 words apiece, so you're looking at 10,000 plus words, plus the half a chapter I have left, so maybe another 1,700. So I probably have 15,000-ish words on the low side, 18,000 on the high side. But I should be able to get 5,000-ish of that done in the next. So I basically have 10,000, which is next week's, and then I'll actually be done early, maybe, yay. So that would give me a little extra time, which is good. Because the last time I ordered books, it actually took like 2 weeks for me to get books. Whereas before, they would run them in just a couple of days. So I don't know if CreateSpace is getting busy and I just need to plan better now. But, you know, we'll be fine. One way or another, it'll all be fine. And there's some interesting stuff in this book. Interesting thoughts, some nice moments, yada, yada, yada. So there you go. So, and then book 8. Will be in the can, off to the beta readers. I'm working on the cover now. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do for the cover. Kind of background processing that as we go. Should be fine. Should be fine. Anyways, I came across an article multiple weeks ago. The article date was September 27th, 2017. And when I read it, I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. So I had marked it. I got back yesterday, I was looking through stuff to talk about the podcast today, and I saw this again, and I thought, yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's called Earth Had Life from Its Infancy. Now, as soon as I read that, I went, oh, really? And it's interesting, in Canada, there were some researchers, they were up in the Torngat Mountains, northeastern Canada, full of life. Reindeer graze on lichen. Polar bears prowl the coastlines. Great whales swim in the offshore waters. Scientists patrol the land, too, looking for the oldest rocks on the planet, which were formed almost 4 billion years ago when Earth was just an infant world. Now, bear in mind that according to all the popular models, the landscape would have been very different. As they describe it in the article, the Earth was a hellish place that had only just acquired a firm crust. Its atmosphere was devoid of oxygen. It was regularly pelted with asteroids. There was no reindeers, whales, polar bears, or lichen. But, according to new research, there was life. So basically what it comes down to is in a rock formation called the Saglek Block, a couple of researchers from University of Tokyo found crystals of the mineral graphite that contained a distinctive blend of carbon isotopes. That isotope suggests that microbes were already around, living, surviving, using their carbon dioxide from the air to build their cells. And if these two researchers are right, and they said, of course, such claims about ancient events are always controversial, then this Canadian graphite represents the earliest traces of life around Earth. So, somehow the scientists have figured out that Earth was formed around 4.54 billion years ago. Said if you condense that huge swath of prehistory into a single year, then the 3.95 billion year old graphite that the Tokyo team analyzes was created comparatively in the third week of February. I said, by contrast, the earliest fossils ever found are 3.7 billion years old. They were created in the second week of March. Now then, what's interesting to me about all of this is it all comes down to, well, he also mentions that scientists have found traces of biologically produced graphite throughout the region in other Insua belt rocks that are 3.8 billion years old and in the thermal hydrothermal vents off the coast of Quebec that are at least a similar age or possibly older. This is a quote from a scientist. Quote, the emerging picture from the ancient rock record is that life was everywhere, says Vicky Bennett from the Australian National University, who was not involved in the latest study. Quote, as far back as we look for direct evidence of early life, we are finding it. Earth has been a biotic, life-sustaining planet since close to its beginning. And they make this conclusion by looking at carbon. There are two stable isotopes of carbon, carbon-12, it's extremely common, and carbon-13, which is rarer and slightly heavier. When it comes to making life, carbon-12 is the more pliable building block. Say, my neighbor's coming down here, or somebody's coming down there for my neighbor's thing, I may just need to stop and say, hey, a minute. So, Slowing down. All right, so he didn't stop and roll down his window, so that's fine. I just waved. Okay, so it's more reactive than its heavier cousin, so it's easier to transform into molecules like hydrogen or carbohydrates and proteins. So living cells concentrate carbon-12 in their cells, and then when they die, that signature persists. When scientists find graphite that's especially enriched in carbon-12 relative to carbon-13, then they take that as a sign of life. Okay, so what you've got here is you've got organisms that are concentrating carbon-12, producing more than the natural ratios that would occur just in nature. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And by that, they say, okay, this is probably the result of Lynette Farren. I'm getting my mail. One moment. This is probably the result of some biological process. So they looked at these rocks. Sure enough, they find these higher concentrations. They think they were very, very careful. And they didn't have anything that got corrupted. They think they have calculated the age of this correctly. They think all of this. There is room for doubt, given how much, this is what the article says, given how much ancient these rocks are, and how much geological tumult they have experienced. It's hard to fully exclude the possibility that the graphite got there later. So, they don't know for sure. But the scientists who did this said they had tried to make every effort to be careful in their studies, etc., etc. And he said their combined evidence makes a strong case that life existed on Earth nearly 4 billion years ago. What's really, and I guess there's another one. Elizabeth Bell, a biochemist from University of California, Los Angeles, said the researchers make a plausible cause that the graphite is original. Bell herself found the oldest graphite that's been measured today. It lurked within a 4.1 billion old zircon gemstone from Western Australia and also contained a blend of isotopes that hinted at biological origin. That discovery is also controversial, especially since the graphite was completely cut off from its source environment, making it hard to know what conditions there were. So here's his conclusion. Her conclusion? His conclusion. Author of the article was Ed Yong. We assume that's a man. Although these days, who knows? Still, this is his quote at the end. Still, all the evidence suggests Earth was home to life during its hellish infancy and that such life abounded in a variety of habitats. Those pioneering organisms, bacteria probably, haven't left any fossils behind, but the two researchers hope to find some clues about them by analyzing the Sanglac block rocks. The levels of nitrogen, iron, and sulfur in the rocks could reveal which energy sources those organisms exploited and which environments they inhabited. They could also tell us how life first lived. What I found interesting about all of this is that for researchers who are looking for natural explanations for everything they find on Earth that do not want to acknowledge any kind of first cause or prime mover, time is the great friend. Because no matter how improbable it might seem that life could spontaneously arise, Lynette's friend has her little dog down, which is, if you hear a little doggy barking in the background that you don't nearly hear, he's inside. So, no matter how improbable it seems that life would arise, well, that's no problem because we can just say, well, it happened billions of years ago. And there was billions of years that it took, for things to kind of get settled and stable. And then there was water and there was warm sunshine and things kind of sloshed together. And the most fortuitous events happened and life just got started. Somehow, all of these intricate mechanisms for the manipulation of carbon, for the building of cells, all got started. It was all just fine. Because it took a billion years to get it started. So, of course, that's enough time. But now the more searching they do, the farther back they get. Well, life already existed then. And so now we're back to 4.54 billion years ago for the start of Earth. 4 billion years ago, there's already bacteria on the Earth. Just like right after a crust formed. Hellish conditions, to use their quote. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Like my friend said, who I just love the quote, and I've mentioned before that I am going to use it for the title of a book some days. I think it's the first book, in fact, in the God War Chronicles. The first book in the God War Chronicles, the name of that book is A Finger in the Soup. I was talking to my friend about this years ago, and he said, yeah, it really sounds like somebody just stuck his finger in the soup, in that primordial soup, and got things started. And it's just really interesting to see that there's really no mention in this article at all about how the farther we push this back, the more improbable this becomes that it all just happened. That there might have been some kind of force that started life. And I've said before, I don't have any problem with God doing anything that he wants to. I don't have any problem at all with him reaching down and starting life, knowing that that life would modify and grow and change and move. And because the language of Genesis is fluid enough that it certainly would be possible to interpret life as being designed for adaptation and interpret our existence such that God waited and he let things just do their thing. And then when it got to be time, in the fullness of time, God then reached down and made the adjustments so that he could breathe the breath of life into man, and man could become a living soul. It's going to be interesting to watch all this, see how it all works out. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.